What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, FightfulSelect.com. This is the Backstage Report podcast. Let's jump right into it. I had a really good interview with FTR. It's dropping this week. We had to Frankenstein this one together. I actually talked to them right before they signed their deals, but had some production issues and, again, had to piece together the interview. But the depth of that AEW tag team division has a lot of fans wondering whether or not AEW should adopt six-man tag team titles. Because quite frankly, if you want to get specific, AEW has 20 tag teams that they could go to. So you cut that in half, you still got an incredible division. But there are plenty of six-mans available. You've got the Elite, you've got the Death Triangle, you've got SCU, you've got Best Friends in Orange, the Dark Order, Jurassic Express, Inner Circle, any combination of them, Stronghearts, whenever they might be back. You probably have a second combination of Dark Order. So that's like eight right off the top of my head, but FTR say that they don't want six-man tag team titles yet. They said it would be trying to run before they could walk. They said that they think that they should establish that tag team division and then eventually do it, maybe. And they're not opposed to it then, but as of right now, they don't necessarily want that. Personal opinion here, hard to disagree with them. There have been times when Ring of Honor and New Japan had rosters that seems like they would have facilitated six-man titles, and both companies instituted them. But then what happened? Nothing happened. And the titles were completely forgotten about. They're jokes. The ROH six-man tag team champions, do you even know who they are? Because I, off the top of my head, I don't. Oh, it's Bandido, Flamita, and Rey Horus. I'm willing to bet that you guys don't know who at least two of those people are, let alone know that they were in Ring of Honor. However, FTR said that Chris Jericho is a person that they would love to have as a third, but he's already doing his own thing in Inner Circle. And of those that aren't in a stable, they said that MJF was actually really good with them backstage and lined up with their mentalities and philosophies on wrestling. And they I don't know if they were surprised as much, but they said that when he doesn't have MJF turned up as much as he does, that he's very easy for them to get along with. And from a mental standpoint, they relate to him a lot. They said that they still have pretty clear goals to accomplish, but after their negotiation with AEW just a few days after their release, they knew that's where they wanted to go. However, that WWE release was not as smooth as WWE would want you to think. FTR said that WWE was planning on extending Dax's contract through September. Now, Dax is the former Scott Dawson, Cash is the former Dash. Dash's deal had already been extended through May, what would have been through Double or Nothing. And Dax, Scott Dawson's deal, was supposed to be up in April. However, they were threatening extending Dax's deal through September, which would have been through All Out. And they said that the only way that they could let Dax and Cash out of their deals is if they signed over several trademarks that they claim, that FTR claims they spent $10,000 on. This was the hang-up. They spent thousands and thousands of dollars, and otherwise they were going to sit out their deals and just do nothing, or I guess continue to be booked through that period, but probably not used very well, but it would have been a few months for Cash, and it would have been several months, about 6 months, for Dax. They said, you know what, we're going to take the immediate release, but WWE had presented this as like, oh, this is a slam dunk, this is an easy decision, this is, oh, great, no problem. But it wasn't no problem, because they had spent a ton of money on it. I also talked to them about pitches in WWE and who went to bat for them. Now, we had reported last year that not only did Randy Orton want to work with them, he wanted to keep FTRKO together and went above and beyond to tell Vince McMahon, tell anybody that would listen, that he wanted to keep that team together. Not only did WWE not keep that team together, they split them up and put them on different brands. And FTR credited Randy Orton for being the only reason FTRKO lasted as long as it did, and said once they saw his push for them wasn't going to work, it was kind of the final nail in the coffin and a final deciding factor for them leaving WWE. For them, it was like, okay, so it's not going to work with him. We've tried it with a lot of other people. It didn't happen. It's never going to happen then. They did say that some of the pitches that they would get from other superstars on their behalf would be positive and negative because they'd get pulled from a hot feud. But they said that Roman Reigns, the Usos, Bray Wyatt, New Day, Shane McMahon, all pitched working with them specifically. And Roman Reigns went to Vince McMahon. They said that. We watched Roman Reigns go to Vince McMahon and say that he wanted to work with us. So, I mean, all the power that could possibly be behind them was there except for Vince McMahon. What a bummer. Full interview drops this week. It'll be up early for select subscribers. Got WWE news. They still want to do that outdoor venue for SummerSlam. As rumored, WWE is looking for places to run in the New York area, even the coast of Florida. At least according to what officials were telling talent when they asked. However, talent weren't just offered up this information. They had to ask about it. And as of last week, production had heard no discussion of the rumors and learned about them online. They were not happy about that. WWE have had an itch to promote an outdoor live fan show for months, and in June there were plans for that to happen in July, but it got scrapped. Speaking of plans changing, so to speak, originally Danny Burch and Killian Dane were supposed to be on SmackDown either this week or next week. I can't remember which one it was, but it was in conjunction with a storyline with Baron Corbin. And maybe Chad Gable and Matt Riddle, but it was tied to that storyline. However, they were pulled and WWE went with Sheamus instead. Raw Underground. I was a fan of how these ended up, besides the crappy camera work, but as of 1 a.m. last Monday, WWE were still filming content for Raw Underground. We're told that there were other hosts besides Shane McMahon suggested for this, including a performance center name, and that the Underground name had been thrown around for other projects, including in NXT, in the past years. Now, that doesn't mean that they were doing an Underground Fight Club. It's just WWE Underground is something that they've wanted to put out for a while, at least for the sake of the name. Much of the main roster had no idea what was even being filmed the day of. We would ask about them and or ask about it, and they'd go, "Yeah, that sounds right." And other people would say, "Man, this is wild. This is getting nuts," and we don't know what's going on. WWE's social media team jumped the gun on the faction news last week after word of the new team had leaked on Pro Wrestling Sheet. Not great. WWE sent out a talent casting call for females to several talent agencies in July. We weren't told if the casting call was for extras, wrestlers, or personalities, but WWE has resumed signing talent after the releases. The irony of this casting call was that it got sent to multiple women who had left WWE in the past several years because they're represented by the agencies, and there's a good chance this call was for the Cage Girls that appeared on the WWE Underground stuff. Resuming training. That's at least what the NXT roster has been told. August 10th, they were told about this in bits and pieces on July 31st, with coaches telling wrestlers they'd be heading to a new facility, which we now know is a warehouse that is really close to the WWE Performance Center. We're told that some of the coaches were frustrated that the trainees were getting paid in full not to train, and that some of them were opting out of the audience tapings, even though you had Stephanie McMahon going on social media and saying, "Oh, this is voluntary," or not social media, interviews, saying, "Oh, it's voluntary, it's voluntary." No, a lot of these people were pressured into still going. In the meantime, WWE has had skull sessions and tape study. They also did a Promolympics contest, which is headed up by Ryan Katz. If that name sounds familiar to you and you watched Wrestling Society X back in the day, he was Cabian Phelan or KB, whatever the hell it was. He was the ring announcer. But the wrestlers submit their own promos and pitches and execute them, so to speak. So, yeah, they've had the trainees doing something, but not quite what a lot of the coaches would wish. Impact Wrestling news. So we learned that in addition to Deonna Purrazzo and Jordynne Grace being set for the Emergence special event from Impact Wrestling, which, by the way, we broke news of the special event and the match in general, but we have also learned that it is a 30-minute Iron Woman match, and that the final booking decision was relayed the day of, so they had mere hours to prepare for this match. That's big time. It's going to headline night two, and it should. I thought that was match of the weekend. The weekend of, I think it was Extreme Rules and Slammiversary. Just an outstanding match. And these two are going to go at it yet again for 30 minutes. Very excited for that. That's a hell of a match. So not only did we have that, but we released the interview with Chris Sabin, but I still wanted to give you all stuff. I know that sometimes you all don't have time to check out these interviews, so I want to give you some talking points from it. I spoke to Chris Sabin. He clarified to me that he came back to Impact because he was familiar with the company and felt at home, but was happy and more at ease that a different regime was there compared to the last time he was in the company. He actually had a conversation with Eric Young at the last set of tapings, and it said it felt like they didn't miss a beat when they got back in there. He really liked the idea of a TNA retro show and hopes they can still do it, but he wasn't even going to wrestle on that show WrestleMania weekend. He told me that instead he was going to do a special guest referee spot. Now, the reason it's a little bit surprising is as far back as November, I was talking to Ethan Page on screen, and he was begging for a North versus Motor City Machine Guns match. And he eventually got it, and he's getting another one as Impact Wrestling Emergence will also have that rematch on night one. But he wanted Sabin in the ring, and Sabin had been an agent, and he said that Ethan Page would sometimes mention to him, hey, I would like this match, but said that Ethan Page is also very respectful to him as well. But it took him all of those 14, 15 months to get back into the ring. And he said that even at that point, he wouldn't have been ready. He tore his knee up in January 2019. Didn't wrestle at all the next year. So, I mean, he would have been a good 15, 16 months in and still not ready. That's nuts. Because it's happened so many times before. He said that his deal with Impact is a bit of a dual contract. He serves as a producer, but also has a talent contract. I think that's very important at this point. New Japan, they ran their first New Japan Strong show right after SmackDown. Interesting time slot, that Friday night 10 p.m. time slot, but I kind of like it. And when Rocky Romero told Fightful's Carlos Toro about why that is, thought it made a lot of sense. He said that not only are they trying to grab the people after SmackDown, but they're trying to catch a Japanese audience the following morning, which it is the following morning there as it airs. So I think it's brilliant. I mean, for a lot of people, Friday night's a death slot. Friday night ain't a death slot for New Japan. They're used to Friday nights in America. So good for them. My interview with Air Parrish dropped. And I know, again, a lot of you haven't checked that out yet. Go check it out. I mean, he was a standout to me in that Cruiserweight Tag Team division. As brief as it was, man, did I love interviewing him. And he even said when I interviewed him, man, nobody will want to hear from me. I disagree, man. If I wanted to, then somebody else would want to. He said that he was originally on a per-appearance deal for his first year in WCW and only missed a few shows, but was mainly used as an extra. Now, the thing that kind of changed for him was when they got offered a contract. It was so bad that he and AJ Styles turned it down. They got Bill Barons to look over things, and he said that they would have been the lowest paid wrestlers in WCW history, probably. But then when WCW was paying them per show to do extra spots and security, it was like $500 a show plus accommodations. He says that Terry Taylor and Shane Helms were integral in bringing them into the company, and they weren't given any big plans or pitches for the tag team division. But man, that's wild how that worked out. Now, I said, hey, you know, you just signed those new deals. And I know a lot of people had long-term deals that they sat out. Was that how did that work out for you? And he said, well, we had 90-day out clauses there, or 60-day out clauses there. So really, they only owed us that amount, and that's what they gave us. He said basically we were on 90-day contracts. He takes a lot of responsibility for not continuing to wrestle after WCW. AJ Styles wanted him to continue as a team, and man, they would have made an impact on the independent circuit for sure. With the Maximos out there, the Briscoes were making their presence felt at that point, and then in NWA, TNA, America's Most Wanted and Triple X were really starting to come around. You had Christopher Daniels and Donovan Morgan over in Ring of Honor. You had Trent Acid and the Backseat Boys. So I think for those couple of years, it could have been really, really good for them. Although AJ Styles' progression was definitely accelerated by him being a singles, I think people like Chase Stevens and Cassidy Riley would have benefited heavily from having Air Paris around. He did say that Bob Ryder and TNA had reached out a couple times, and Jeremy Borash, but he didn't end up coming in. But today, Air Paris is a family man. He keeps in touch with AJ Styles, and Styles brought one of his kids into the ring to celebrate with him at the WWE, with the WWE title at a house show. And he was at an Impact Wrestling show recently. So it was awesome. I love catching up with wrestlers who made an influence on me and an impact on me when I was younger. Because the thing is, I know that if they did, even if they were around for a few weeks or months, I know that it probably did the same for some of you guys as well. Let's hit you with injury updates. Natalya has not been on TV in weeks, but she was backstage. Dexter Lumis got pulled from TakeOver Triple X. We're told that he injured his ankle on that dive that they had to edit together. Unfortunate they had him win the match right after that and had to pull him. Jordan the Ninja returned. He was seen backstage guarding the underground door. He's been out since the COVID testing happened. Shane Thorne, he appeared back on NXT this week. I don't think he was injured. He was just off Raw. Kushida has been out of action since May. He is scheduled to return to NXT this week. And Kyle O'Reilly. Oh, man, am I happy to see this guy back in the ring. He had appeared in a couple of skits along the way, but he had not wrestled since way back in March. I mean, my God, he missed almost 5 months from TV. So it's great to see him back. He's one of the best workers in the entire world. Glad he's back in action. QT Marshall returned to TV after battling COVID. EC3 over an Impact. He's been out of action since September 2019 with a concussion, but he has returned on screen. He is cleared to return, as he told me, but he's also scheduled for a return. He has a match set for early September. And I added Chris Michaels to the independent injuries. He had shoulder and bicep surgery in May, and he told me that he's expecting to return in January 2021. Check out the full interview I have with him. Just, it's another one of those interviews where you might think, oh, well, I don't know a lot about that guy. Maybe I wouldn't be interested. Then you hear about it, and you're like, oh, wait, he was in WCW working a lot of people, and WWF working a lot of people, and OVW helping Shelton Benjamin and Brock Lesnar get ready. Oh, and then he had an NWA TNA run. Oh, and then he main evented an Impact show with Johnny Impact a couple years ago. It's a very good one. Contract news. MVP has signed a multi-year deal. This is amazing. He has helped keep this show, this Raw show, as interesting as it can possibly be with the obstacles in front of it. So good for him. Matt Cardona has joined AEW, but confirmed it was on a short-term deal. Brian Pillman's MLW deal runs through July 2021, and he wants his release. He has been very outspoken about wanting his release. Here's to hoping that he gets it, because they're not paying very well right now in MLW. Stats for the week. The first ever Raw Underground took place this week. This was not actually Dabba Kato's WWE debut. He participated in the 2018 Greatest Royal Rumble as Baba Tunde. He lasted just under 6 minutes and was eliminated by Braun Strowman. He did, however, win the first two Raw Underground matches. Two Raw matches went to a no contest, and four of the five matches on SmackDown this week ended in a DQ, no contest, or a distraction finish. Jeff Cobb has effectively missed 5 out of the 8 months of action in 2020, but has still managed to wrestle for New Japan, Ring of Honor, and AEW while competing in the USA, Netherlands, UK, Ireland, and Canada. Dakota Kai has won 7 of her last 8 one-on-one matches. Kenta wrestled his first match in 6 months this week at New Japan Strong. FTR's only losses in AEW are matches that are 8-man tags or more. Every match on AEW Dynamite went at least 11.5 minutes, except Big Swole beating Reba, which was 1 minute 38 seconds. Reba, also known as Rebel, has now wrestled in televised matches every year since 2014. Now, this means WWE Network or cable TV or pay-per-view. But this has been across TNA, Impact, NXT, and AEW. Amazing. Colt Cabana has won 3 matches in a row and is undefeated when teaming with Brody Lee. Amazing. Scorpio Sky has won 7 straight singles matches. All 7 are since the beginning of June and are on AEW Dark, and he's not lost a singles match since his world title loss to Chris Jericho. Samoa Joe has been out of in-ring action since September 2019, aside from a 1-month period between January and February. Thank you guys so much. Every time you like something on Fightful Select, it'd mean the world to us if you'd tell the people that you like it so much. Word of mouth is important when it comes to spending your money. Thank you so much. Until next time, guys, stay tuned. Check out that Jimmy Van Q&A. It was a lot of fun. We're out.